Hello, and welcome to Connectivity, episode 355. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, and joining me, as always, a day later than usual, but he's here, John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody. You didn't have to tell him that. Alex might just stay up all night and edit this and get it out on Friday. You don't know.
Who knows? I mean, hopefully, famous last words, hopefully this won't be that long of an episode. But
yeah,
we do have some things to talk about, and next week, we might have a slightly weird schedule.
Yes.
We are finally going to record the Twilight Princess 3D Zelda Game Club. We're going to be doing that Monday, February 6th.
Yep.
Okay, on Monday, February 6th, that night, we are going to be recording that. So if you want to send in your thoughts about Twilight Princess to connectivity@nintendoreport.com, then we'll read them on the episode. They get there after. Sorry, we already recorded it. And if you're looking at the rumor tea leaves, there might be a Nintendo Direct next week. So
honestly, by recording the Game Club on Monday, we have guaranteed that the Nintendo Direct will be on Monday. You're welcome.
Pay no attention to us saying like at the start of the Twilight Princess episode like 356, and then it winds up being 357.
Yeah.
It's
next
happen.
Week could get, we should just record two versions of that episode's intro just in case.
Yeah. Yeah. And if there is a direct, then the Twilight Princess episode won't come out for another week. We'll do a direct reaction. If it happens,
unless we just want to get Alex to just quit the website and make him edit two podcasts in a single week.
I mean, he can still do that. It's just that we should probably only still have them come out on a weekly cadence, because then we can take a week off.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to talk about some fun things like how Nintendo's likely not going to be at E3. And then we got some listener mail, and then we're going to talk about some games that we've been playing, the Theater Rhythm demo, maybe a SpongeBob game, maybe some Xbox stuff. We'll get there when we get there. And depending on how long we yell at each other about Nintendo and E3 and an empty second half of 2023, maybe we'll have time for more games. But John, let's start there. So there was reporting from IGN that Nintendo, along with Sony and Microsoft, will not be attending this year's E3 event, the first in-person E3 since 2019. And it was supposed to be the ESA, the lobbying agency, the Entertainment Software Agency Association.
Anarchy. Lands
Association. Yeah. But the company that puts on E3. Which is, you know, made up of, there's a bunch of video game companies that are a part of the ESA, and E3 was supposed to be making its grand in-person return, and it will not have the three platform holders attending, if this report is correct, which it kind of seems like it is, because the ESA did respond, and they were like, I'm sure you saw the IGN report, and then refuted none of it.
So. Yeah, they made some comment to like, we knew it would be difficult to blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I haven't laughed as hard at anything in a long time as I did when I saw that no one was going to E3.
Yeah. And
it's just going to be like Atlas in an empty room.
I'm
trying to think of groups that I know I've seen at E3 before.
Will Devolver still have their like set up outside in the parking lot? Probably
they'll be like, please come inside.
Like, I think E3 is going to happen whether we like it or not. I just think it's going to be like an empty carcass of an event. And it's wild because there were some years in the past decade that were kind of an empty carcass of an event. It's almost like, regardless of the pandemic, we were probably hurtling towards this reality.
Yeah, I mean, it was, the event in general was becoming less and less relevant. Yeah, this was bound to happen. I was kind of just hoping E3 would die a quiet death, but honestly, seeing it die gasping for air as everyone turns away and refuses to help it is way funnier. So yeah. I'm kind of enjoying this.
I guess, like, to go back and kind of give like what E3 even was, I forget the exact year that it, I think it was early 90s, because it came out of what is it, CES, which is computer entertainment show. I think that's that acronym. And then E3 started up in the 90s. It was originally in, I believe, Atlanta, and I think maybe bounced around a couple places before coming to LA, late 90s, early 2000s, I think. But the purpose of E3 wasn't so much for live streaming press conference grandstanding. I mean, one, it was the 90s. What internet were you going on where you were seeing like Peter Main talk about councils. Like,
yeah,
that wasn't happening. There was a reason why back in the early 2000s, Nintendo Report, when we were playing at GameCube, would like have things like media discs that you could get that would have the camcorder footage of the press conference that we have. It's why that's some of our most viewed stuff online.
Right.
Because we're the only people that have it.
Right. If you've seen Nintendo's 2002 E3 presentation, that was from us.
Yeah. Like it was for press. It was for retail buyers. Like that was kind of the purpose of it. It was in June. You would basically be pitching towards there would be the media that would cover it. There wasn't really as much of an enthusiast press there. You did have, you know, your EGMs, I guess technically your Nintendo Powers, even though they were, you know, in-house for one of those companies. And you would have like representatives, buyers from, you know, like Toys R Us, Walmart, what have you. They would be able to go there, see what games that were coming out, potentially put down orders for buying those games for when they came out and things like that. Like that was the purpose of E3 at the outset. Over the years, it started to blow up. Like I think for me, it was early 2000s, largely because of Planet GameCube, that E3 became something that I paid way more attention to.
Yeah.
And it probably peaked in a way with E3 2004 with the Twilight Princess reveal trailer, because I remember, like, I was in high school at the time, like going on whatever computer I could and trying to watch like clips of that trailer and people at that event.
Yeah,
like ravenously with a bunch of friends at school all losing their minds over it.
Well, and it's 2004, so like the videos you're watching online of it are like at 120p.
Yeah.
The way I remember watching that trailer was when it was distributed in like the following Nintendo Power.
Yep.
Like the next month had a DVD with that trailer on it, and hoo boy did I watch that trailer over and over again.
Yeah, I worked at a library that had decent internet for 2004. Mm-hmm. So I was just going on the computer there while I was working.
Yeah.
Showing older coworkers, like, look at this. Going to Planet GameCube at the time.
Yeah.
But then 2006 happened, where that was when the Wii was playable and it was bonkers. Like, to give you some insight, I believe Nintendo World Report, I think that was our first year when we were Nintendo World Report, I think like 25 people from Nintendo Report covered E3
That's
that year.
Insane.
Which is a testament to how gigantic it had become. And that was after 2006, I think the cost of it became so extravagant. It was extremely over the top and ridiculous, like swag out the ass, celebrities all over the place, stuff like that. And then that's when it was, you know, essentially shut down. 2007 was a year that if you ever talk to former NWR director Steven Windyman Rodriguez about, that was the one in Santa Monica where basically everybody had their own, like you would like go to one hotel and play Activision games, you'd go to another hotel and play Bandai Namco games, then another one for Sony, another one for Nintendo, and you were just driving all up and down Santa Monica. 2008 was a minimized, but it returned to the LA Convention Center. 2009, also the first one that I ever went to. That was when they kind of went return to form, although it did not, it never reached the excesses of when it ended in 2006. And then it kind of stayed consistent at that level, but slowly whittled away. Sony backed out. You had things like, I think there was one year where like Konami had a booth that just had like a Metal Gear trailer playing or something. Like,
yeah.
Activision, I think also had a couple years where they didn't really have anything that you could like play. Like companies started to pull away, not do as much.
Well, in like 2000, like, you know, around 2010 or so, like live streaming this stuff became more common. G4 at some point in there started televising it. So yeah, it became less of a business thing in that sort of decade.
Yeah, and it was becoming a lot more of a media spectacle.
Yeah.
To fans as well. And that was when, I mean, you started to see the desire, and I think it just became, I don't know if it necessarily became easier to get into or people just started to learn how to get in, but there was a lot more like fans showing up at E3.
Yeah.
And I forget if they actually did sell like public tickets at any point in those last couple of years.
They started selling public tickets in 2016.
Okay. That's when I stopped.
Yeah. So 2015, they gave out like a very limited number.
All right.
And then 2016 is when it full on just went to them selling tickets.
Yeah. And it was
because before that you had to be like, you had to provide press credentials or retail credentials or what have you. You couldn't just go to E3.
Yeah, you could be like a friggin' desk jockey at a GameStop and be able to go to E3, but you would have to,
right.
You would have to pay for your ticket, which media stuff is complimentary if you get approved. But industry passes cost money. So like if you wanted to shell out $500 for a ticket or whatever and you worked at a GameStop part time, you could do it.
Yeah.
You just have to, you wouldn't be able to do anything because most of the stuff is appointment based.
Yeah. Yeah, what's on the floor is very little of what's actually happening.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another thing, is that the extravagance of it really narrowed down over time. Like, I remember when I first went in 2009, you went to Nintendo's booth, like, they had, like, so much stuff playable. Like, I think that was your New Super Mario Brothers, Wii Sports Resort, a bunch of random WiiWare games, like, a Line Attack Heroes, which I think that was made by Grezzo. It never actually came out. It came out in Japan. It did not come out in America. But they would have like just random games that you'd never heard of. A lot of third-party stuff in all of the platform holder booths. And in the last couple of years of E3's life, like Nintendo's booth in 2016 was just Breath of the Wild. And the focus for all of these companies became way more narrow.
Yeah.
But that brings us to today, where I honestly can't envision what E3 would look like, or if it would even be worth anyone who doesn't like live a couple hours drive away at the most to go to, especially this year. Like maybe they'll figure it out and it'll reach some kind of middle ground of like what New York Comic Con and PAX are, because that's like the Reed Pop puts on New York Comic Con. They put on every PAX. They do a wide. I think they do Star Wars Celebration as well. They have event expertise. I think they just need to figure out exactly what E3 is, and I think E3 is going to look more and more like a PAX and less like the E3 that everybody wants it to be.
Right. And at that point, does it even still have value if it's just another PAX West?
No.
Yeah, we already have the event that E3 would potentially be turning into. So there isn't a whole lot of value in just having another one for no real reason.
But there is one part of this reporting that I want to linger on. So it came out. It's something that has come up already. I think the outlet that claims a lot of things. It's not meant to be as snarky as it might read. If you look at like how the website VGC reports stuff, it's always like the it's got a very consistent format where it's like Metroid Prime Remake to launch soon, comma, it's claimed.
Right.
So they claim a lot of things.
It's that classic Half-Life 3 new screenshots.
Yeah.
Where like it just they put it in the way that's optimal for SEO. And then have their qualifier on the end.
Yeah. With that, there's been some chatter about this. It happened last fall where people were talking about how after Tears of the Kingdom comes out in May, like Nintendo doesn't have anything for Switch. Which, of course, then led to people being like, oh, is the new system coming out holiday 2023? They can't have nothing after that. And it's
well, they're right. They can't have nothing after that.
Yeah. It's one of those games of telephone that I want to kind of stress a little bit because I do think some of the people who talked about that qualified that they don't have any quote unquote heavy hitters. And I believe somewhere a heavy hitter was kind of loosely described as a game that sells more than 10 million copies.
Right. A game comparable to Tears of the Kingdom.
Yes. Which Breath of the Wild sold, I think it's just shy of 30 million copies at this point, which is an absurd number for any Zelda game.
Yes.
I think maybe Ocarina
it's
of Time.
It's an absurd number for a game.
Yes.
Like, that's a very good selling game, period, on any platform.
Final Fantasy VII Remake, a game that people probably were like, oh, that sold, but like I think that sold 5 million copies.
Yep.
It's not a lot. For a game that sells over 10 million copies, by what we know about publicly available Nintendo sales information, about 15 games on Switch have sold more than 10 million copies, all of them by Nintendo, a third of them Pokemon games, some of them stuff like Ring Fit Adventure. I mean, here, I'll just rattle down the list real quick. Starting with the undisputed champion, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, with almost 50 million copies. Jesus Christ.
Stupid.
Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Animal Crossing New Horizons, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Breath of the Wild, Pokemon Sword and Shield, Super Mario Odyssey, Super Mario Party, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, Ring Fit Adventure, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee, Pokemon Legends Arceus, New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe, Splatoon 2, Luigi's Mansion 3, and Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. I'll also note that Splatoon 3 will likely be on the list now. It was like almost, it was at like 8 million after a month. So it's definitely crossing 10 million.
Yeah.
And there's some other, there's a few other fringe things that could probably make it like 3D World or Mario Party Superstars. But for the most part, like that's, you know, if you think about the Switch has been around for 6 years, 2 to 3 of those games at the most per year.
Yeah.
And if we're looking at specifically, like, if you're looking at E3, it's the second half of the year. There have been a number of years where Nintendo doesn't really have quote unquote heavy hitters in the second half of the year. 2020. For one, that I mean, 3D All-Stars, I'll give it credit. If it was on sale, it probably would have sold more than 9 million units.
Right. But still. They demanded it not be a big hitter.
But even in I think 2021, I think the only one was Pokemon. For the most part, it's like, guess what? If a Pokemon game comes out, it's going to sell more than 10 million. But here's the kind of games that if a game like that were to come out this year, it likely wouldn't be a heavy hitter. Metroid, Super Mario Maker, any other Zelda game, a Kirby game, a Mario Sports game, Donkey Kong Country, another Warriors game, Fire Emblem, Paper Mario, a Yoshi game, Xenoblade, Captain Toad, Miitopia. If you're like me and you'd like to see Ever Oasis come out to Switch, guess what? That's probably barely selling a million. Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, not a heavy hitter. Astral Chain, WarioWare, Bayonetta. That's that
despite
game came out last
what
year.
Some voice actors may have claimed.
Fitness boxing. You know, that crossed a million. Good for fitness boxing. But like that's the thing, is that like, guess what? Pikmin 4, if that does come out this year, that's not gonna qualify as a heavy hitter, but I'm very excited for that game.
Right.
And I think it's
that game's a big deal. Like,
I mean,
even if it's not going to sell, right? There's, and that's the thing, is I think there's a lot, like, if heavy hitter is just games that appeal to absolutely everyone or at least just some gigantic audience, then yeah, you do miss out on tons of stuff. And then like you go beyond like the existing Switch library and like Star Fox, F-Zero, Paper Mario, like none of those are gonna be none of those are heavy hitters.
Pretty much a heavy hitter is a Pokemon game and a Mario game, which if there isn't a new 3D or 2D Mario game like in the next year or so, that's a little surprising and disappointing, but Nintendo's still gonna have games.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of room for, I mean, because you cannot, like anybody listening to this, like you can't look me in the eye and say that if Nintendo were to announce that this fall Thousand Year Door HD were coming out, that you guys wouldn't be hyped. Like, but that's not a heavy hitter sales wise. I mean, maybe it'll turn out to be, but it's realistically it's not going to be. Right.
Bring me an F-Zero. I'll lose my goddamn mind. That's not a heavy hitter.
All of your most requested games that you most want them to put on Switch are not heavy hitters.
You want a Golden Sun? Why? Right. That's not a heavy hitter. Advance Wars, that sure shit ain't a heavy hitter.
No, if it hits.
Yeah.
That remains to be seen.
Did you see that like there's some Reddit, like this is one of those things that like maybe it's so dumb that it's true, that there's like a Reddit post being like, I'm working at a Walmart and we just get a standee that says that Advance Wars is now available and we're supposed to put it out on February 10th.
Sure, that sounds believable. I do. So the thing about Advance Wars that I do think is legit is if there's a Nintendo Direct next week, Advance Wars is there.
Yeah.
And that's because like the much more like real evidence that we have of the eShop listings for that and Tears of the Kingdom have been given whatever identity number they need to be eligible for pre-orders. So like,
yeah,
those are clearly prepping for an event.
Yeah. I don't think Nintendo is putting money into a cardboard standee for a game that's not going to sell well.
Well, and if they're going to shadow drop it, they're not going to release physical standees to brick and mortar stores. Because if they're going to shadow drop it, it's probably digital only.
Yeah. Like, and maybe a physical release coming out in the future or something.
Like, right. But they're not going to send out standees to the brick and mortar places for a digital game. That's not what they do.
Yep. And if we're talking, guess what? It's not a heavy hitter. Why are they going to market it?
Right. Why bother?
Yeah. I mean, if they're not going to E3, because they're not going to market Pikmin 4 and F-Zero and Paper Mario and Kid Icarus, then like, what are we doing with their lives? Like,
right. It is crazy to me that Metroid Prime 4 could be out for Christmas. And by these metrics, we would not consider that a heavy hitter. Like, that's the level of game that would, even if, and this is all assuming that the people who are saying this because they just don't know are right. For all we know, like, they're saying, oh, we haven't heard of anything past Zelda, just means that Nintendo's gotten kind of good at keeping stuff under wraps recently. Like, there could totally be a 3D Mario for the holidays, and it's maybe just that dude at IGN or VGC or whatever hasn't heard, just like I haven't heard.
My joke thing about it was that a heavy hitter is not going to come after Zelda because a 3D Mario is going to come out around the movie.
Right.
Like, right. They have to do something around the movie with the game, right? There hasn't been like a mainline Mario game in a very long time. Even a port, like 3D World was the last one.
Yeah,
because 3D World was, I was thinking whether it was that or 3D All-Stars, but 3D World was started 2021. Like, we're gonna see Mario something. It probably won't be a quote-unquote heavy hitter,
sure,
but it could be. I mean, as we were talking about before the show, Luigi's Mansion 3 selling over 11 million units, like, that's crazy pants for Luigi's
Mansion. Planned on that. Yeah
I think 2 did like 5 or 6, and it was like, holy shit, look at Luigi's Mansion go.
Yeah,
but yeah, like, I see this concern and people expecting like the new console to be out like by November or like, you know, March next year. Like, I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. New consoles probably, like, I wouldn't be shocked if this time next year we have an idea that a new console's coming.
Oh yeah.
That holiday or it's in 2025.
Like, we are near the end of the development process on a new console.
They have probably locked in what it will be. And also with that, comes up every now and then that I talk to industry sources, blah blah blah. Having been through a cycle where I've had a little bit like more insider info, that year or two before new console, like, stuff gets locked down. Like, as I've heard with like the lead up to Switch, like in 2016, nobody at Nintendo knew fucking anything about the Switch unless they were actively working on it.
But once you get into that range where like things are going into production, then it's kind of impossible. Like the OLED, for example, we knew that some sort of OLED screened Switch was coming because we were like, well, Nintendo just bought a whole bunch of OLED screens. Like, it's hard to have those massive like purchases and like factories going into production without that information getting out there. So like, if they were going to release a console this year, we would know because we would be seeing evidence of production. Instead, I think they're like ramping up production on the regular Switch.
Yeah. And I think that came from Mochizuki at Bloomberg, that report. Yeah. And he's actually the person who reported on the OLED screens, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah.
I think the rule of thumb that I've heard is that, I mean, this might be revision versus new console, but it was like last year when there were rumors of like, oh, the Switch Pro might actually come out in 2022. It was essentially like, if it was going to come out in 2022, it would have had to have like gone into production by like July at the absolute latest. Mm-hmm. And if there's like no word of it by the end of July, then it's probably not happening.
Yeah.
And typically Nintendo, I think, times it so that way, like, they announce stuff as it's going into full production, because it is a risk to like have, you know, if you're producing something like that, just as there are more of things, it is harder to keep thing a secret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, Nintendo ninjas have refined their effectiveness over the past couple years. There was a while where, yeah, like pretty much every game that was announced, it was like, oh yeah, I heard about that. I'll be real, like Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes, I don't know anyone that really knew about that, or Mario Strikers or Switch Sports. I think I heard like some murmurs of like Nintendo wants to bring Wii Sports back, but like that was it. There's a lot of things that like we don't know about, and I guarantee you there are several games coming out this year that, okay, yeah, might be the level of a Mario Strikers or a new Fire Emblem Warriors game, but there's going to be a couple games like that'll come out. Maybe they will strike your fancy. And also Metroid Prime, something for Metroid Prime should be at least talked about this year, for God's sakes.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, like, it'd be cool. I just want, like, sign of life. Show me some kind of, like, this is what we're doing with Metroid Prime 4.
Or the remake.
Fine. Yeah.
I'll take whatever.
Yeah. I like Metroid, man. It's a really good series. The entire sales of the entire series might equal up to one heavy hitter.
Dread was what, 3 million units? Maybe 4 million?
Like, yeah, it's like wild success for Metroid.
Right. But like, if there were a Metroid coming out this year, y'all would be excited.
Yeah, yeah. And also, guess what? They don't need to bring Metroid Prime 4 in demo form to E3.
Yeah.
Like, they don't. They can do, like, guess what? Like, Nintendo's been doing a pretty regular cadence of inviting press for demos. Like, I mean, we saw Splatoon 3 last year. I think Switch Sports was there. Yeah, there was a Pokemon demo.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo's figured out how to do that in a post-COVID world. And I think it's probably cheaper for them to do, you know, like, inviting press to New York City or LA or Seattle or San Fran or whatever, than you know, doing the pandemic risk of having everybody at E3, which I think is also something that people are kind of, like, overlooking in all of this, is that you look at Nintendo going to E3, I don't know if we're in a world where, if you're Nintendo, I don't think you're sending over all of your Japanese developers to a giant convention center. Even if America might be ignoring that COVID is a thing, it's still there. There's just a lot of factors at play. And it is probably that they don't have, you know, they don't have a new Pokemon game. They don't have a big new Mario game. Their Zelda game's coming out the month before E3. That's probably a factor in it. But there's a lot of other factors that just straight up Nintendo doesn't need to do this shit anymore. They're fine.
Right. I don't remember if I said this on the show before, but it feels like these companies, you know, PlayStation was already out, but like Xbox and Nintendo, it kind of feels like they were probably looking for a way out of E3. And it had always been explained as like they had existing obligations, but like I feel like they saw it out and they're taking it. I don't think they want E3. I think for Nintendo, like the moment they got Nintendo Directs working, the need for E3 sort of disappeared. And now Xbox also has not Nintendo Directs, that they even call Directs, because there's only one thing we could possibly call a live stream. And so there's no need for it. Microsoft just the other week had a Direct that was very much what I would have expected from their E3 presentation. Like, they don't need this. They're moving on.
Yeah. Even though I think Microsoft said that they're going to have an event in LA, just not be a part of E3.
Sure.
Which is hilarious.
It's cheaper. Pretty sure they own a theater.
And I guess like one final point too is that even if you compare it to E3 to, you know, or Nintendo's presentation to like what they did during the Wii U era, a lot has changed since then. And I think when it comes to Nintendo, I mean, you can just, I think we kind of didactically did it a couple episodes ago of going through of like when they announced things, like we're kind of gone from the years where they, you know, like announce a bunch of things years before they come out. Like there's a pretty tight cycle of, I mean, Fire Emblem Engage was what, September to January. Yeah. Xenoblade was, what was that, February or March to July.
In fairness, that one was planned to be September.
Yeah, yeah.
It got shorter.
And like, yeah, you do have your stuff like Tears of the Kingdom having a couple years where it's announced. But I also think that, you know, that is a special game in the fact that it is a bigger tentpole. I don't really think there's just much to be concerned about for Nintendo this year. We're also in the seventh year of the console.
Yeah.
Has Nintendo had a seventh year of the console when a successor hasn't been out? They haven't given a price drop to the fucking system yet.
Right. It's still doing, like, we're just now starting to have some months where we're going, oh, something beat the Switch.
Yeah.
Like, just 7 years in. And that's just now starting. And it's not like the Switch is selling poorly. It's just that, like, the other systems are also doing very well. So,
yeah, I don't think Nintendo's ever had a system be, like, the main thing. I mean, like, I guess, like, Game Boy, like, from a home console perspective. Because Switch is a weird hybrid thing where there's definitely been systems that have lasted longer than 7 years. Like the Game Boy was but active for 11, 12. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, like, because the NES was, I mean, if you're looking at like America, like 85 to 91, either way, like that one, like maybe technically it definitely lived to that point because there were still games coming out on NES until like 94. But then Super Nintendo was 91 to 96. Then N64, 96 to 01, 2001 to 2006, 2006 to 2012, 2012 to 2017. Yeah, the Switch is doing fine. And we're at a period where we're going to see probably some lower tier cool games. And it's going to be fun.
This is the golden, wonderful hour of the Switch, because this is where they start to be like, well, we're through all the Wii U games and the marquee titles that we have to do. Bring me the F-Zeros and the Star Foxes and the stuff that we haven't made, the Kid Icaruses.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is the... I'm excited. I am way... Like, when you list off those non-heavy hitters, it's all of my favorite games.
Like, that's my so, shit.
Right. Like, the fact that Xenoblade is not a heavy hitter. Yeah, great, cool. And we should have, like... We already know there will be a sizable Xenoblade 3 expansion this year, which, if history serves as a precedent, will probably get its own physical release. Like, there will probably be a new Xenoblade release this year.
Oh my god, I can't wait.
Like, that, not a heavy hitter.
Yeah, but it'll be. Maybe I'm also looking at this a little bit that, like, yo, I'm eating well. Like, Fire Emblem Engage, I got a lot farther into it than I was last week. That game slaps. Xenoblade 3... Like, the best RPG that I've played in 20 years. Kirby right. The Forgotten Land, immaculate. Can't wait for Zelda. Like, I'm at the point where the back half of the year is just gravy. Like,
yeah.
You give me, like, Pikmin 4 in August, I'll die. I won't make it to Prime 4.
Like, I haven't finished Bayonetta 3, and I haven't bought Mario and Rabbids yet.
And those are, like, both great.
And I want to. Like, I just haven't had time. So, yeah, no, I'm good for a while.
So, speaking of good for a while, because we're in the waning days of the Wii U and 3DS eShop, it will no longer be good. Let's go to listener mail from Stephen Woodcraft. He says, hi, guys. It's been a while. I really appreciate the thought you have put into answering emails. Aside from me, send more emails into connectivity@nintendoreport.com. We apparently put some good thought into these.
I put so much thought into everything I say. Can't you tell?
I sometimes I do. I did do research to get ready to start spouting.
Yeah, you Googled some things.
I did. I used Google. I made a list. So back to Steven's email. I've got a problem and need your help. The Wii U and 3DS eShop closure is weighing heavily on my mind. I keep pondering at my wish list, which I filled up after watching too many recommendation videos on YouTube. Part of me thinks this could be my best chance to grab these, but are these just old, overpriced games that I'll never play? The Onion Assault developer, Bertel Horberg, has said that he has doubts if they will be able to cover the development costs. Could my money and time be better spent on modern Switch indie games? Here are just some examples to demonstrate my problem. Wii U, games that the physical price is just too high. He points out that he's in the EU region. Game & Wario, Zelda 3D games, A Shadow's Tale Wii, Metroid Trilogy, Pikmin 2 Wii, Game Boy Advance games, Super Mario Advance 4, Kuru 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 Ren, Wii U eShop exclusives, Pull Box World. It's so weird to see the European name of that game. Dr. Luigi, Star Fox Guard, Donkey Kong 64, Race of the Sun, 3DS physical, price is just too high, Yo-Kai Watch 3, Radiant Historia, eShop exclusive, Tank Troopers, The Mysterious Murasame Castle, Hydro Adventure, 3D Classics, Kirby and Excitebike, DSi games, art style games, all of them, Starship Patrol, Dragon Quest Wars. Thanks in advance for your thoughts and wisdom.
So I do like the comments at the beginning here about Bertel talking about sales for Onion Assault and the comment of, like, would it be better for me to spend my money on modern indie games where those indie developers are, like, actively doing things that could probably benefit from the sales.
My answer to that is yes. Your money is better served buying modern games, that especially indie games that can actively support developers.
Yeah, and especially, you know, I got a soft spot for old Bertel.
Yeah,
because his stuff is great. And I know that he's like he did very well with Gunman Clive and then has continued to make excellent games. I firmly believe that Mextermination Force is the best thing he's ever made, and I think it might be one of the worst selling.
Yeah.
So yeah, buy his stuff. I did also, I'm going out of order, but before I forget that Star Fox Guard didn't get a physical release in the UK, which it's too bad the Wii U's region locked, because I saw a copy of it today at work for $1 and would happily send it to you, but I do not think it'll work on your Wii U.
Here's the dark thing of this is have a waking dream, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like,
yeah, I guess it. Okay, so I guess my answer to your question about some of these are, why do you want them? Like, if you're buying them because you think, oh, we're going to lose access to them, like, if I don't have them, they won't be preserved. I won't have access to them anymore. If that's your reasoning, then, like, A, don't worry. The weight of preserving these games does not fall on your shoulders. They are all already online.
Some probably before they officially released.
Yes, that does sometimes happen. So, like, if that's why you want to get them, then, like, I get that, but it's okay. Like, they are very well preserved. The 3DS especially is extremely, because of how easily hacked that thing was, the 3DS is extremely well preserved online.
It is funny that when this was announced, I hacked one of my 3DSs just because I was like, I want to have this done, because mm-hmm. then this is like, if there is any game that I don't have, or, you know, like, whatever, like, if I have an issue downloading it or something like that, I just want to have this locked and ready to go. And it's fun. Like, I have played 3DS a handful of times since then, and I just play my 3DS that has all my games on it that I got over the years.
Yeah.
But, like, I kind of recommend doing that, because it is a little bit of way, like, I think it's a better way to future proof than buying everything at the last minute. If you were like planning a playthrough, if you're like, you know what, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to play through Mysterious Murasame Castle on the NES like next week. Yeah, absolutely buy it. If you're like, I want to play it at some point in the next couple of years, don't buy it.
Well, and for all you know, and like, I'm not even like, and I should be clear, I'm not telling you go steal a bunch of indie games off the internet. But yeah, like you said, if it's something that you just think you might want to play someday, then A, this stuff is backed up, and B, by the time you get around to wanting to play it, it might be on whatever the current console is that you want to play it on. I've been playing some 3DS recently, and I have a lot of trouble going back to that system. And even for games that I own, I often opt for having a waking dream, because I just prefer playing them not on a 3DS. So, yeah, I guess a lot of it does depend on why you're doing this. Now, the one exception I will make, DSiWare games are like 100% preserved. Every DSiWare game is backed up on the internet, and there's a waking dream I constantly have where I have all of them in a folder should I ever need them. That being said, we haven't figured out how to emulate them yet, as far as I know. So, like, DSiWare games, if you want any of those, go for it. Like, that's kind of my exception. Like, I don't know when we'll be able to emulate those. I don't know if we'll figure it out. Yeah, go grab yourself some DSiWare games. And if you haven't bought Xscape yet, it is the best DSiWare game, and you should buy it.
I mean, there's other Q games, Starship Patrol, great.
Yep.
Did they do Trajectile? I think Trajectile was also yep. them. And DigiDrive. I love me some DigiDrive. I actually got a repro cart of the... I guess, what were they? Bit Generations, I think is what yeah. they were called in Japan. That has the OG DigiDrive on it. And it's just a very sublime game. All those yeah. art style games are excellent. But I mean, I've reached a point, and this is a little bit reflective of seeing, you know, Wii U and Wii and 3DS and a lot of consoles that were very important to me. You know, I'm coming up now next month. I will have been doing Nintendo World Report for 15 years. So I, you know, came in during the Wii and the Wii era. I think the DSi was like the first console that came out, and I started reporting on this nonsense. A lot of stuff that's near and dear to me, and it's kind of sad seeing it go. I have gotten to a point where kind of what John was saying earlier is that like other people are preserving these things, that I'm a little bit laissez-faire when it comes to digital things, just because it's all kind of fleeting. Like whatever digital downloads we have only go as well as the hardware that they're on to an extent.
especially on like 3DS, where like there's not even Wii U, like there isn't really a super robust account system. So like you're very much just buying it to be on that system. And when that system goes,
it's done. So
you realistically aren't going to be able to get it onto another system without hacking it and then just downloading the ROMs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's, I even look at that way with Switch. Not, well, not from hacking it. But
yeah,
but I look at it from Switch is that like I'm, it would be super cool if the next Switch system, a lot of the stuff that I bought carried over. I've invested a lot of money in this damn thing, but that's not like I want to play the games that I have, which I often do a very bad job of doing that. There's a handful of games that I've bought on sales over the years that I have barely touched or maybe not touched. Someday I will play you Tome. Apparently that game is awesome. Griftlands, looking at you. I've heard you're great. But like the digital stuff is eventually going to go away. Like that is the how the world works. Unfortunately, Nintendo, unlike Microsoft, has been pretty good about it. We're just seeing some games from like 20 years ago, 15 years ago being taken down, which is a bummer to see. But like, I made sure I bought Blue Dragon and Lost Odyssey. Damn it!
To be clear, those are being taken down from like the 360 marketplace. Some of them are still available on the Xbox marketplace.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, there's like they didn't, it's not a consistent storefront. So and we've seen some stuff start to like pop back up. So I think what they might be doing is migrating it to other places. And some of those aren't backwards compatible. So like, you know, who knows what they'll do with those. But yeah, so I think that's just a case of they didn't have a consistent storefront until like the Xbox One. And so now they're kind of reconfiguring it.
With Wii U and 3DS, like this getting shut down did kind of make me think about how like, oh, maybe I don't want to go full bore digital like I did for a while. And I had my short list of 3DS and Wii U games that I wanted to try to get physical copies of. There was some that like, I think Wii Sports Club is like stupid expensive.
Yes, it is.
I was kind of looking for that and I was like, nope. But I did get like a hard copy of Wind Waker HD. I only had that download and some 3DS games. I actually comically got Theater Rhythm Curtain Call. And that is a little bit redundant now, in a way. But changed my habits with Switch, which a little bit is also by the fact that I have two kids that one of them is, you know, playing Switch on his own, and the other one's probably not too far behind. Although by the time he starts playing stuff, we'll probably be onto the new console, which is weird and frightening to think about. But I've been leaning towards getting physical games more, just because that's the stuff that I know I can kind of count on a little bit more, even if it might not be, you know, the fully upgraded, downloaded version down the line. Yeah. I do also have a decent amount of faith in, I guess, decent amount of faith in hackers, preservationists.
The community.
Yeah, to make sure that, like, yeah, like, when I have, I don't know, I'm thinking about one what game had some, even like Bayonetta 3. That's a game that, like, in the far-flung future, when the Switch, when it's 2050 and the Switches are, Nintendo's no longer a company anymore, I would expect that somebody has figured out online of how to, like, get the update where I can play the Bayonetta Origins demo as, but like whatever that recent update that they had.
Yeah.
And even stuff, I mean, let's get real. Go into the future, people are going to have, like, Splatoon servers spun up.
Oh, yeah.
That's gonna happen. Like, that's
right. Can still play Mario Kart Wii online if you know who to talk to.
Yeah, I have faith that like those things will be preserved, and I'm just kind of the things that I want to be able to play. You know, I have my hard copies of Dragon Quest games on DS because for right now, that's kind of the only way to easily play Dragon Quest V in a way that I don't hate. I think Dragon Quest V is like on mobile, but like, duh. And just kind of like live and let live. Like, there's too much shit to play. You don't need to play every single thing all the time. And stuff that, like, yes, when you want to play Kuru Kuru Kuru, play Frogcopter on Switch. It's actually a pretty solid Kuru 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 indie game. But also, like, you'll have a way to play that GBA game in some capacity, whether it's on your computer or if you get a Steam Deck or an Analog Pocket or something. Like, there will be some way without you having to like go into the bowels of the internet to play that. If you want to go into the bowels of the internet, there's all sorts of things you can play.
It just occurred to me that under Wii U eShop exclusives, you have Donkey Kong 64 and Race the Sun. Both of those are out on other things, right?
Well, I think Donkey Kong 64 is not on any other virtual console except for
Wii. Was it not on the Wii one? Okay.
I don't think it was. It'll,
it's going to show up on NSO at some point.
I was looking at this. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Murasami Castle and DK64 show up on NSO at some point in the future.
And honestly, you don't want to play N64 games on the Wii U. Like, that's if you're gonna preserve the memory of Donkey Kong 64, which you don't need to do anyway, but if you're gonna preserve it, like, the Wii U version probably isn't the way to do that. Race the Sun, you should play, but I believe it's also on Steam, and I think it's on, like, it might be on, like, PS4 and other stuff too. Good game, though.
But yeah, I mean, I guess if I had any kind of recommendation on this, and at the end of the day, live your own life.
Yeah, just don't feel pressured.
Yeah, like, to live, like, in the present everything. Or live in the past, but don't live in the past to the point where you're spending $300 on games that you're maybe might one day get to.
Yeah, and by the time you get to them, they'll all be on Switch.
Yeah.
And then you'll feel like a doof for having bought all of them on Wii U. Maybe buy Star Fox Guard. I don't know how expensive Star Fox Guard is on the EU eShop.
I hope one of the heavy hitters for the end of the year is a Star Fox game, so I have more motivation to play Star Fox Zero again. Not Star Fox Guard. Fuck Star Fox Guard. I don't care.
That game is a solid 7 out of 10, I think. It has a higher Metacritic score than Star Fox Zero.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's what happens when people don't actually play Star Fox Zero, and they just cry about how they can't play it.
I do. Every time I boot up Twilight Princess HD for the Game Club, I think about how I could be playing Star Fox Zero on that thing instead of Twilight Princess HD.
Same.
Like, that's the hardest part of playing Twilight Princess HD is how many other games there are that I could play that aren't Twilight Princess HD.
I have the Wii U still hooked up, and somehow I'm playing a game that I'm having less of a good time with. Preview for next week or the week after show.
It has gotten better. It got better after Lake Bed, will admit.
I think Lake Bed sucks.
I don't mind the temple.
It's the area. It is the area around it.
Right, I don't think
the temple's that great. Yeah. I think the temple is definitely one of the worst. I mean, City in the Sky is, I think, my least favorite temple in all of.
Yeah, Planet City Princess. In the Sky sucks.
Snowpeak's still real good, and I like Temple of Time a lot too.
I'm a big Arbiter Ground fan, so
also good. But I do want to talk about briefly, and I don't really have that much to say about it, but I did mention it. Play the Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line demo.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, man, I want some more Theater Rhythm in my life right now.
That demo seems huge.
So it is, but it's like it does have like a level cap for stuff that you can earn. So far, I've played through Final Fantasy V and Final Fantasy VII that they have there, which is like, I think it's like 5 or 6 songs for each game. It's a pretty beefy demo. Like, you can spend a couple hours with it, and it is a really good taste of the game. And for the most part, like, they just made Theater Rhythm again, which is like, that's exactly what I wanted. There's a few new mechanics that I've seen a little bit of like consternation about them online, but I think I like it because it keeps it, it doesn't make it so it just feels like the 3DS game, but now it's on Switch or PS4 or whatever. There's no touch controls, which I know some people are really bummed out about, and I chalk that up to the fact that, like, yes, it's coming to Switch, but it was a cross-platform game with PlayStation as well. And they have the mechanic where you can hit, typically when you'd be doing the rhythm stuff, you'd only be hitting like one button at a time. Now they have ones where you hit two, and sometimes it kind of cascades. So you'll hit two buttons, let go of one of them, hit another one. And it's kind of cool. And there's also ones where you have to take the two joysticks and like point them in opposite directions. And like, that's a note, which, that one still trips me up a lot, because it doesn't show up that often, and it usually catches me off guard whenever it does. But I like it just because it has a lot of finger dexterity. It's just a really good rhythm game, and it's nice to get back in the swing of it, and I can't wait for all the DLC. There's Legend of Mana music and Chrono Cross music and friggin' Nier music, which I still need to play Nier Automata, but I've heard the music is very good.
Yeah, that was one of those games where I was very familiar with the soundtrack long before I ever played the game.
Yeah, I'm gonna get the huge ass season pass and deluxe version, whatever. I want to live in the world of Theater Rhythm, and it's a good demo. Check it out.
Good.
Do you have any games you want to touch on before we wrap it up, John?
Sure. I'll real quick say that I reviewed SpongeBob SquarePants, The Cosmic Shake, which was surprisingly good. I went in with pretty low expectations, but really solid 3D platforming that like kind of evolves very nicely as you progress. The game does a good job of doling out new movement abilities and then building upon those. And just very, not too difficult, but just very satisfying 3D platforming. And it looks pretty nice on Switch, has some performance issues here and there, but like overall looks solid, great character animations. It's funny. It's SpongeBob. You get what you get. But yeah, pleasant surprise. And then also Age of Empires 2 hit Xbox earlier this week, which is a real-time strategy game from like 1999 that I've been playing since 1999. And so having it on a obviously PC real-time strategy game, very in-depth, like it's Age of Empires in general, but especially like Age of Empires 2 is kind of famous for like, even within real-time strategy, which is already a complex genre, Age of Empires is a complicated game. Like it's very comparable to something like StarCraft, but where in StarCraft you have three civilizations and two resources, Age of Empires you have four resources and like I think 20 something civilizations that are all unique and all have different advantages and disadvantages against each other, all have unique tech trees, all have unique individual units and tech. It is a very complex game. And so getting that onto a Xbox controller was not something I was horribly optimistic about, but I've been pleasantly surprised to find that it is totally playable. They do some really cool things to give you the option to automate certain tasks. So like when you're generating villagers to go to different resources, rather than manually assigning villagers to each resource, you can just hit a button and select from like preset distributions of what percentages of your villagers are going to go on different resources, which is great because it gives you like one less clicky thing to do with a controller. But it also does a good job of not making it too good. Like your villagers aren't that smart. And I also feel like none of the options are like perfectly optimized for like what's accepted as like the ideal build. So it's like it doesn't feel like cheating because you're always going to have to go in and sort of do some manual corrections. But they do a really good job of giving you just enough help to make it work pretty well on a controller. And then the bonus of this is being on Game Pass. It's also on cloud and has touchscreen support on phone. So you can play it on your phone, which is even dumber than playing it with a regular Xbox controller. But yeah, you essentially just have the entire Xbox controller as a touchscreen thing on your phone. I do wish that they implemented like actual, like, if I click on a unit with my finger on my phone that selects that unit, because I know that the app does support that. They did it in Townscaper. If you play that on your phone through xCloud, it just is a touchscreen as opposed to having buttons, which works super well. So it would be cool to see them do that in Age of Empires, but either way, the way they have it does work. And I just had the realization today as I was playing it that the last time I played Age of Empires on my phone was in 2005. On my LG Chocolate, where I played the old 2005 mobile version of Age of Empires 2, and which played like absolute garbage. So it's just weird to think about how far phones have advanced to the point where I'm now playing a version that is superior to the original PC version I played back in 1999 on my phone. But it's good. If you haven't played it, try it. It's a bit intimidating, but it's the best real-time strategy game ever made. And you should play it, and I will play it with you. And I'm not very good at it either, even though I've been playing it for 20 years, and I will lose to you, and then you'll feel better about yourself.
I should check it out sometime.
It's good.
It's definitely one of those games that I remember screwing around with like 20 years ago.
It came with a lot of computers.
Yeah. It's like that was an era where like I messed around with that, and like Civ games and things like that. But it's a lot of it. Like, I remember even playing Civ when it came to Switch, and it was, like, this rush of, like, oh, yeah, it's that. My eras where I, like, dicked around with Warcraft and StarCraft, too. It was just, like, when I had a computer of my own that I could do things with.
Yeah.
But maybe, I mean, I don't... I still haven't even finished Xenoblade.
Yeah, finish Xenoblade.
Then we could finally have our spoiler cast.
Right. That's our big hitter for 2023 as our Xenoblade 3 spoiler cast, released 1 year after the game came out.
I mean, if that direct does hit next week, I assume we'll find, I mean, I wouldn't even be shocked if like the next wave of Xenoblade DLC is like shadow dropped. I would assume it's at least going to get dated for the next character. Absolutely. I'm at a point where I am looking at it where I'm like, okay, once again, I got to a spot before Fire Emblem came out where I'm like, okay, I can put this down and come back and not be that lost. And I'm like, I might as well wait for the next character.
Like, yeah, you're just going to keep doing that, inching ever closer to the end without actually finishing it.
I mean, it really is just a tremendous game. And a lot of the reason why I haven't finished it is because whenever I go back into that world, I just get lost in it and find myself doing other things than finishing the game, which honestly, like, just thrilled. What a damn video game. But Age of Empires is one of those things that I should mess around with and bother you about it.
You should. Is that the end of the episode?
I think that's the end of this episode of Connectivity. We'll talk to you next week, either about Twilight Princess HD or Nintendo Direct. Who knows? If you want to write into us about either of those topics or anything related to Nintendo or Microsoft or Xbox, send in emails and listener mail to connectivity@nintendoreport.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon about heavy hitters.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.